stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. You don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand up for your rights.
Ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in a Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you gonna
we gonna stand up for
yeah,
all right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better
get up, stand up
in the
don't
morning.
Give it up.
Stand up for your right.
Stand up.
Hello and welcome to Y57 at CFRO 102.7 FM Radio. Thanks for tuning in and listening to our special programming about Status for All. In the studio are Gab and Anne, and we will lead you through our 1 hour program. And as I'm a foreign student, I'm very curious and excited about the outcomes of this show. I'm from Germany, but living and studying in the UK, and at the moment I'm in Vancouver. And that's why I'm really, really interested what problems immigrants in Canada have to experience and to face every day. As previously said, will there be a march on May 27th in Toronto, organized by the No One Is Illegal, who are demanding better treatment for immigrants in Canada. We will talk to a member of NOII Toronto about the march and what they want to get out of it. We will welcome guests from the Filipino youth who meet at the Kalayani Center, and they will tell us a bit about their lives, what issues and problems they have, and what struggle immigrants from the Philippines have to face in their day-to-day life. You as a listener have also the opportunity to participate and to call in and share your experiences and opinions about Status for All, No One Is Illegal campaign, or the Don't Ask, Don't Tell campaign. The number is 604-684-7561. We hope to get some important information out there and that we can inspire you to think about arising problems of racism, deportation and the exploitation of marginalization of immigrants. We will listen to a song now from the Brazilian girls called Die Gedanken sind frei, which means in English, all thoughts are free.
Thank you. alles in der Stille. Und wie es sich schicket, mein Wunsch kann begehren, kann niemand verwirren, denn es bleibet dabei. Sperrt man mich ein im Fenster der Kacke, ich spotte der Pein und menschlicher Werke, nur meine Gedanken zerreißen die Schranken und Mauern.
And back to Y57, 57 minutes for the youth. I'm very happy to say hello to Craig in Toronto, who's a member of the No One Is Illegal network. Hello, Craig.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you? Thanks for being up that late. It's already 10 p.m. in Toronto. And thanks for having time to talk to us today.
No, thank you.
So tell us a bit about No One Is Illegal campaign. What does it stand for? What are your objectives and what do you demand in general?
Well, No One Is Illegal Toronto is part of a broad network of No One Is Illegal organizations from across the continent, right, including No One Is Illegal in Vancouver and Montreal. But No One Is Illegal Toronto specifically is a group of immigrants, refugees, and allies who are working towards a fight for migrant rights in this country. And so we have five broad demands that include an end to all the deportations, an end to all detentions, an end to religious and racial profiling, a national program for regularization of all individuals who are without status, and also solidarity with our Indigenous brothers and sisters in their struggle for sovereignty in this country.
Mm-hmm. So, in general, what kind of problems and struggles do people who are immigrants in Canada have to face in their day-to-day life?
Well, we find that right now, the way the immigration is set up, it's very much set up to bring people in with a lot of money, right, to allow people to gain immigration status who can sort of buy their way in or come through the point system. But it really makes it very difficult for working class people, people from racialized countries, people from the global south to come into this country and do the jobs that nobody else wants to do and gain that status, right? So we end up with this economy, which we estimate around 500,000 non-status people who are living and working in this country without documentation, without access to basic and essential services, without necessary protections that average working people need in their day-to-day lives. And they're doing the jobs that nobody else wants to do, right? They're working as living caregivers, they're working in the backs of hotels and restaurants, they are working as taxi cab drivers in the construction industry. Mm. And so life is very precarious for non-status people in this country.
So why is it actually important for people like that they're covered by a refugee program or that they actually have a status as an immigrant?
Well, we do know right now that like the immigration system in this country is broken. For instance, the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, which was passed, actually stated that we require a refugee appeals program that should be in place. And currently there is none. Mm-hmm. And that was... that was something that was legislated by the government when they introduced the IRPA, but they never actually acted on it, right? So we also have the issue where when they did implement the IRPA or the IRPA, they actually brought the tribunal down from 3 people to 1 person. And that person actually isn't even somebody that has to be a lawyer or somebody familiar with immigrant or refugee process. It's a government-appointed position, right? Mm-hmm. So what we have is a tribunal with 1 person who decides whether or not you stay in the country as a refugee. And so what we're seeing because of that is a lot of people who are being rejected, or the refugee claims are being rejected, and they have no way of appealing the process, and they can't go back to the countries of origin because of economic strife or socio-political strife or something that was the reason why they left in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So what will happen on Saturday, the 27th, in Toronto?
Well, Saturday, May 27th, is actually a national day of action. So there will be demonstrations that will be happening in Halifax, in Montreal, in Ottawa, Toronto, and as well as in Vancouver, which I believe the demonstrations are happening outside of the art gallery.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And in Toronto specifically, we are organizing a march and celebration that's going to happen downtown Toronto in communities that have been recently targeted or affected, including Spanish-speaking communities, Portuguese-speaking communities, and African and Latino communities. And so we are going to have a large march. We are expecting thousands and thousands of people. We have been endorsed by the Canadian Auto Workers National Caucus, and Buzz Hargrove, who is the president of the CAW, has sent a letter out urging all members of CAW to participate in these demonstrations because of their importance for undocumented workers.
Uh-huh. Did you actually receive any response from any governmental institution so far? Because you're protesting a lot and you're kind of demonstrating the opinion you have and you want to support the immigrants out there. But was there actually a particular response?
Well, I mean, we have had some support from various opposition members of parliament. But the Conservative Party has been very close in terms of negotiating with immigrant and refugee communities. And in fact, their style is actually deteriorated compared to the liberal style of immigration policies, where we're seeing a lot more of a U.S. enforcement style policy. We're seeing children who are pulled out of schools. We're seeing people searched and questioned at subway stops, at malls, on public thoroughfares, and this is something that's completely unique to what the new government has implemented in terms of their immigration and refugee policy in this country.
As you just mentioned it, that people were pulled out of schools, there was actually a case of the Lisanne Sousa family just happened currently in Toronto. Could you give us some information about that case?
Sure. So No One Is Illegal Toronto has been working with the Lisanne Sousa family, and essentially, what had happened is about a month ago, maybe it was about 6 weeks now, immigration authorities came to Dante Alighieri Academy, which is the Catholic secondary school in Toronto, and requested that the principal bring 2 students, Kimberly and Gerald, to the principal's office, at which point they were informed by the immigration authorities that they would never see their school again, that they would not be able to come back, and that they were going to a detention center. At that point, they were forced to clear out their lockers and were escorted as if under arrest by the authorities out of their school in front of all their peers. And they were held at what's called the Rexdale Immigration Holding Center, or the Heritage Inn in Rexdale, Ontario, which is near the airport. But that school and the students at that school decided that this was something that was completely unacceptable. And they started to organize, and they contacted us, and we've been working with them. And they organized massive demonstrations in front of the detention center, and were able, through a huge public outcry, through the support of teachers' unions, through the support of their teachers and principal and the chaplain at their school, they were able to secure the release of Gerald and Kimberly Lizano Sosa, as well as their family. and we are working and continuing to struggle to allow that family to stay in this country. And in fact, actually, Kimberly Lizano Sosa will be one of the speakers at our event, and she will be, her and her family will be leading the march on May 27th.
Okay, thanks, Craig. That was really, really interesting. I wish you good luck for the future and for the 27th in Toronto, and have a good night, and thanks again for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you. And if people want to get in touch with No One Is Illegal, you can do so by going to our website, which is toronto.noonesillegal.org. Or if you do want to get involved in Vancouver's No One Is Illegal, you can link from our website to Vancouver's website, or email us at noonesillegal@riseup.net.
Great. Yeah, we will announce it later again. Thanks again, Craig, and good luck, as I said. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, before we are going to talk to our next guest here at Y57, I would like to tell you a little bit more about the current happenings. And as Craig just mentioned it, happenings where young people were threatened by deportation or the deportation of their family members. It seems like a new trend that immigration officers working to schools take students who have immigrated parents who might hide out of class and call the parents to force them to come to school, otherwise they will take their children in custody. Usually the parents, understandable, completely anxious that anything will happen to their children, arrive shortly and the officers arrest the parents and plan to deport them. What does the government intend when they are using children to pressurize their parents? How do actually young people cope with the situation, knowing that their parents, grandparents, and sometimes even themselves will be deported, forced to go back to their home country in Latin America, Asia, or Africa, a country with high poverty and a violence rate, and a poor education system? A country which they even might not remember as they left it when they were so little. Issues like that we will talk about today, and we will also talk about how young people of color are treated in our multicultural society in a modern, developed, democratic country. Are we really that tolerant, political correct, and fair-minded as we always pretend to be?
Mama, they come in to take you away. Mama, they come in to take you away. Don't know what you done, Mama, but they say they gonna make you pay. Mama, should I send a letter to Uncle Leroy and Aunt Flo? Mama, should I send a letter to Uncle Leroy and Aunt Flo? Just slide down into that envelope, Mama. Ain't no one gonna know. Mama, should I bake a cherry pie and hide you inside? Mama, should I bake a cherry pie and hide you inside? You're so sweeter than cherries, Mama, and you know I never lie. Mama, should I make you pay wings? I don't want paper and wax. Mama, should I make you pay wings? Never look back. Mama, should I ask sweet Jesus to come down and fight? Mama, should just done mama. But maybe he just might. Don't know what you done, what you done, mama. But maybe he just might.
Right, there were the Lullaby Baxter Trio with Mama, Should I Bake a Sherry Cake and You Hide Inside, which basically says everything. Before, I'd like to welcome our guests, Mildred, Carl and Albert, from the Filipino-Canadian Youth Alliance. I'd like to remind us that up to 200,000 people without immigration status live in Canada. They have jobs including instruction, manufacturing, cleaning or restaurant work, and have a significant contribution to the Canadian economy. We all use goods, and we just have to accept that, produced by non-status people in our daily life, like buying their foods or their clothes. Non-status people are exploited by their employers but have no right to resist, as they haven't got the Canadian citizenship or are covered by any under any refugee program. Their illegal status ensures that capitalists are able to maximize their profits by keeping their expenses down. We also have to admit that structures similar to racism emerging in our society. People of color may have the same rights like everybody on paper, but in reality, they seem not to have the same status as all humans anymore, a status everyone is supposed to have as a human being. At this point, I'd like to say hello to Mildred, Carl and Albert, and let's hear what they have to say and what they want to talk about. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing? Welcome at Y57.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's great that you're here. So, where are you all from, actually?
From the Philippines? No. my parents are from a province called Masbate and Romblon in the Philippines. Southern part of Luzon.
My family came from Quezon, which is near Manila. Mm-hmm.
And also from Luzon.
All right. And all your parents immigrated to Canada, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So why did they decide, or you as a family, decide to come to Canada?
Well, that's my experience. My mom came here because of the economic inflation in the Philippines, and she was forced to migrate to the LCP, which is a living caregiver program, and it's a racist policy, Canadian policy, through like migrant workers, because they have to live in care for the boss of the house, and it's 2 years program. All and right. They have to complete that,
and then they would gain status in Canada. Or
yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so during those 2 years, it's 3 years, but they have to finish 24 within months within years. 3 years. And yeah. Within those 3 years, they're only on contract worker status. Basically, they're temporary worker status. They don't have any actual rights in terms of if they're not getting paid, if they're being mistreated at the workplace. Basically, they have to go through a very bureaucratic process in terms of asserting their rights. Basically, they have to fill out a 10 or 12 page form with their boss if they want to make a complaint. That's just if they want to make a complaint.
And that's in English or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Also, the Living Caregiver Program stipulates that women, because majority under this program are Filipino women, 95% of people working under this program are Filipino women. And they cannot bring their children with them. So there's family separation. The Filipino youth experienced long years of family separation, and many of them experienced for nearly a decade. So,
all right. Yeah. So, were you separate from your family?
Yeah, I was separated from my mom like 7 years. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, when I was 11, I came. Oh, 12, I came to Canada, and so we're reunified, and then. So it was hard to, you know, build that relationship again, because it's also like cultural shock.
Yeah.
And yeah,
and your mom is just like a stranger at one moment for you.
Yeah. And so you traumatize. A lot of these youth that coming to this program too are like traumatized. That's why. Mm-hmm. And that's why the youth here, Filipino youth, have like the highest dropout rate, or second. It's 60% dropout rate.
All right. Do you actually feel that the teachers, that they took care of you, that they kind of treated you a bit special, as you are special when you came here after being separated from your families for a long time?
Actually, in the Vancouver schools here, there is a lack of genuine support and program services, and even understanding about the experiences of Filipino youth. You know, and that is why we try to bring this issue to the Vancouver School Board, that they have to recognize the struggles of the Filipino youth, that Filipino youth are experience long family separation, and that that when they are reunited in Canada with their parents, it's just like they're strangers. And then they have to adapt to a new life here in Canada, but there are no support or services in school. And I don't, and we also think that they don't have the understanding of the struggles of the Filipino youth.
Mm-hmm. So, and when we bring these issues to institutions like the Vancouver School Board, which we have in the past, they're often shocked and surprised by the statistics that we find from our own research, the stories that we get from our community. And when we share it with them, they're absolutely clueless of what's really going on. So, in terms of trying to understand where our community, what our community is going through, they're quite lost, and it really impedes the process of helping those Filipino youth.
So they basically don't know much about you and about your background, so they can't really represent you on the Vancouver School Board. Or?
Yes, definitely. Despite Filipinos being the third largest visible minority in the Lower Mainland.
All right. I actually heard about a really, really sad case of Jomar, which happened like 3 years ago, but it's still like an issue. He was beaten dead in front of his school by teenagers. He was just 17 years old. And yeah, why did that happen?
Basically, we see it as a result of the systemic racism that's within the Vancouver School Board, the lack of support and genuine services for youth of color within these type of institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So South Asian youth were involved in the beating, but we're not blaming them, and we're not trying to say, oh, this is entirely their fault. Basically, we're saying the responsibility lies in the institution that was responsible for them.
Okay, so did anything change after that incident? Like, were there any improvements that now teachers take more care of you, or that the government kind of responded on that?
Actually, after the death of Mao Jomar Lanot happened 3 years ago, and until now, the Vancouver School Board has been reluctant to hear about our issues. In the past, we offered grassroots-based anti-racism analysis and education, but they had been reluctant to our demands.
Okay, yeah. Why did they do that? Why didn't they try to support you to improve the whole situation?
I think it's the bureaucracy of the Vancouver School Board.
And not that, only that, yeah. But because for us, racism is a systemic thing.
Yeah.
It's a product of society and those who control society. And those who control society are those in the government, public institutions, like the Vancouver School Board, the justice system, and so forth.
So did you actually had to face at any time anything where people said something against you because your skin was a different color, or that
my whole life? I remember my first racist experience being when I was in kindergarten.
Really?
Yeah. So basically my whole life. And it created a large impact on me. Yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Basically, it made me very angry, and when I would lash out, I would get punished for it, but they wouldn't ask why I lashed out. Mm-hmm. So anything like that. And then basically it came to the point where I dropped out of school, I joined a gang, I started doing drugs.
Mm.
And I still actually haven't finished school, but I realized you don't really need to finish school to go to college here. So,
What about you guys?
And actually, I have experience when I was going to Vantech, mm-hmm. and 25 Filipinos were kicked out of the school because they were just sent them a letter one day saying they can't come to the school anymore. So what the school does is they just, you know, dismiss people instead of really looking at the issue of systemic racism.
It was due to a conflict that was going on with the Caucasian youth and Filipino youth.
Yeah.
Though the Filipino youth weren't the instigators, they took most of the damage. One youth, his brother, got slashed in the throat and in the wrist. And then how the Vancouver School Board and with Vantech, the way they dealt with that is they expelled the Filipino youth.
And until now, the Filipino Canadian Youth Alliance still asked the question, why was it only the Filipino youth were forced to transfer?
I mean, that's unbelievable if I hear stuff like that, because I thought we were living in a really modern society, you know, everyone has the same rights, we're just all human beings, and I thought actually everybody realized that, but still we seem to live in the past. Would you actually say that after 9/11 that your life changed in a particular way, or?
Definitely, yes. I mean, the attitude towards people of color, especially immigrants, was very negative. There's the anti-immigrant sentiment grew.
Yeah,
and exponentially after 9/11.
And immigrants has always been seen as the scapegoat of crisis. That's you know, in the society, they always blame the immigrants for the crisis that's happening in the
So, and you actually try to wake them up and say, "Look, guys, we are not the ones you have to blame. We
exactly.
are we are innocent. We are just people like you.
Mm-hmm. We're products of what the society has created. And really, who controls society?"
Yeah, and you enrich countries like Canada so much, because basically everyone in Canada is an immigrant if they are not part of the First Nations, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Before you leave us, I heard you brought a poem with you, which Mildred is going to read out. What is that about?
This poem is written by Jose Maria Sison. He was the founder of Kabataang Makabayan, or the Patriotic Youth, which is a militant youth organization in the Philippines during the first quarter storm in the 1964 to 70s. And the poem that I'm going to read, the title is "I Am Determined to Rise." It's a very inspiring poem.
All right, let's go.
I am determined to rise. The demons are laughing, they say I have fallen, but the people's movement in the whole country is advancing. The red flag flies high, wafted by a powerful wind, the thought that broadcasts the seeds of the revolution. The seeds grow so fast in the soil made fertile by the sweat and blood of heroes. Here, victory is certain to be reaped. It is as if I did not stumble, so long as the cadres and fighters continue to arise from the masses. I am determined to rise. The devil himself shall weep over a kingdom of ash heaps.
Thank you very much. That
Thank
was
you.
Very,
you
very nice. Okay, if people would like to support you or join you, where can they actually reach you?
They can reach us at the Kalayan Center, which is the Freedom Center. It's located at 451 Powell Street. And you can call us at 604-215-1103. And you could also email us at ukpc_fcya@kalayancenter, the Canadian way of spelling it, .net.
All right.
Yeah, we also have a website, www.kalayancenter.net and www.ugnayan.net.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much, guys, for coming in.
Thank
it was
you.
A pleasure.
Thank you. So much.
That were Mildred, Carl, and Albert from the Filipino-Canadian Youth Alliance. And now we will listen to a song which just fits so good. It's a song from Martin Luther King, his speech, "I Have a Dream." And enjoy.
Freedom, I have a dream, dream for everyone. I have a dream for peace and justice for every people. A dream for everyone. One day there will be no borders. Brothers and sisters, in peace of together.
Hello everyone, my name's Harjab Grewal. I'm going to be following up this interview that we just had with some Filipino youth here in Vancouver, with some youth from Mexico that are here in Vancouver, and to talk about some of the same issues around immigration. And I'm going to get right into the interview, as we're a little bit short on time on the show, but I want to ask all the youth here. We have Antonio, who is just arrived from Oaxaca in the last couple of days, and he's an organizer with SIPO RFM there in Mexico, and also Heal, who's an organizer with SIPO RFM here in Vancouver, and also Paco, who is an organizer with Justicia for Migrant Workers here in Vancouver. Basically, what I'm going to have all the panelists do is just talk a little bit about what they thought of what's happening in the U.S. with largely the Mexican community mobilizing around issues of immigration in the United States, that saw a historic amount of people come out for the demonstration, and how they see some of these issues and problems with immigration in both Canada and the U.S., and how they relate to the NAFTA agreement that was signed between the three countries.
Bueno, Muy buenas tardes, soy Antonio Villanueva del SIPO RFM. Y bueno, las protestas en los Estados Unidos nos inspira una inmensa alegría, ¿no? El que los gobiernos respeten los derechos humanos de los trabajadores, y bueno, y también que reconozcan la aportación dentro de la gran aportación dentro del sistema económico, ¿no? Recordemos que Estados Unidos, pues, es una potencia que se logró hacer su fuerza a través de los trabajos de los migrantes. Bueno, ¿y qué relación tiene esto con los tratados de libre comercio? Tiene mucho. La inmigración es consecuencia lógica de un sistema completamente injusto, un sistema que a los trabajadores les niega los derechos, a los trabajadores los explota, a los trabajadores los mata de hambre, y bueno.
I was going to have Heal translate that for you.
Okay, so what Antonio is saying, and just to expand a bit, we are really inspired and we are overjoyed by the protests and by the movement that is developing in the U.S. with the migrant workers and all the illegals, quote-unquote illegals, because it shows that they have the power to ask the government, or not just to ask them, but to have their work being recognized as part of an economic system that depends on them. Also, we are seeing how people in Mexico are forced to immigrate to the U.S., for example, because the agriculture sector in Mexico is not really a viable option for people, because it's their products are priced so low that they have no option other than to starve to death or migrate.
Also, Paco, you've been working with some migrant workers here in Canada, and how do you see these protests and what NAFTA means to immigrants coming from Mexico to Canada?
Well, the recent mobilization in the U.S. around immigration issues depicts the increasingly negative effects of the NAFTA agreements as economic opportunity diminishes in the third world countries due to liberal policies, and people are forced to go abroad in search for better economic opportunities. The problem with these policies is that the migrants, well, the workers' interests are not considered. And so when they come abroad, they're basically used as cheap labor to produce major profit for multinational business communities. And as they get here, they're in a position of extreme vulnerable, where they have no ways of looking out for their own safety, and they cannot fight, they cannot basically demand fair treatment as human beings. They're pretty much treated as animals. What we do with migrant workers, Justicia for Migrant Workers, is try and help them in whatever way we can. But yeah, it's encouraging to see such movements in the U.S. because it makes us realize that people are willing to stand no matter what the odds are.
Well, thank you very much for everyone coming in. I think it's also very encouraging to see that there's youth from Mexico that are so determined and committed to organizing around these issues and social justice issues. We're going to be having a protest in Vancouver on Saturday, May 27th at 2 o'clock at the Vancouver Art Gallery. There's going to be a lot of communities there. And do you guys have any closing thoughts before we go?
Well, just as an extension to that, we would like to just express that as youth from Mexico, and having Antonio here as part of the upcoming World Peace Forum and the World Youth Urban Forum, we are seeing that there's a lot of organizing in Mexico, for example, that is really an issue that can be broadened by support from other countries like Canada. So in this sense, we are encouraging everybody to get involved in anything that they have any sort of interest. And so we'd like to invite everybody to all the events that may be organized around the World Youth Forum and also the World Peace Forum. And to have people get involved, and hopefully together we can do something much more than just stand and look.
Yeah, I think it's really crucial to get people that are not really involved to take the interest